Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm going to chug a little lemonade here. This is the official beverage of Sour Graps. Because I need to be reminded that the world is a sour place. Especially the world of WWE. It's weird. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Everything sucks. I don't know if I said that. It's weird. Like, SmackDown is in a really good place. You know? Like, overall. And yet, there's an air of dread. Apprehension. How are they going to screw this up? Because you know they're going to. But, like, maybe they won't, though? Like, I mean, they have to. Like, they have to. That's the thing about it is they have to. Every time you think, oh, no, wait, this time they're going to get it right. This time they're not going to fuck it up. They do shit like Dominic Mysterio versus Baron Corbin in a forever feud that will not die. I can feel comfortable saying that after only 3 weeks. 3 weeks, three matches. Baron Corbin won two of them. Dominic got his win back via cheating. So this is going to continue forever. Also, WWE, they can't not make the wrong decisions. You know, how about this guy who signed with you 7 years ago and dwelled in absolute fucking anonymity at the Performance Center for years, finally caught on as part of a tag team act. You brought that tag team up. The guy who doesn't even wrestle as part of the faction says some horrible bigoted shit online, so you banish the entire squad off of TV for months. Then you finally find a way to get all of them back on TV. The bigot, oh, he's got a starring role. He's doing some shit over on Raw. But the two guys who aren't horrible bigots, at least not outwardly, I don't know anything about the guys, but they show up again on SmackDown, but the best you got for them is to dress like a couple of dorks running security for a guy who thinks he's an actual king. Then that guy gets COVID and has to miss TV and reports say you fire him over it? Like, we'll get into that more later, probably, but they can't not make the wrong decision. Hey, it's the 33rd anniversary, because that's a really big, important number. God, I remember my parents' 33rd wedding anniversary. We had a big blowout for them. And then, you know, when I turned 33, that was a landmark year. Who can forget the 33rd anniversary of the release of The Godfather a few years ago? Wasn't that a big deal? They re-released it, I believe. In 3D. In 33D. But, you know, since 33 is a big anniversary year, let's bring back a fucking racist. And have him talk about this match he lost 33 years ago. Hey, you know what we should do? Let's put that segment on right after we celebrate Black History Month. Like, just do a, let's do a WWE Celebrates Black History Month segment, and then go right into a filthy, stinking, no good, fucking piece of shit racist talking about him match he lost 33 goddamn years ago. Seems like the thing to do. Oh, no way. The opposite of that. They can't not fuck it up. And yet, like, maybe this is the one time they get something right, like, in recent memory or ever. Remains to be seen. If this company was not the absolute fucking dirt worst, there might be reason for optimism. But they are the absolute fucking dirt worst. So pessimism rules the day and the weeks and the years. Oh, the years. How slow they pass by. Yeah, so let's talk about SmackDown after that crazy introduction, which I touched on a few things we'll be talking about today, tonight, in more detail. It's like 0 fucking degrees outside. It's like negative 20 with the fucking wind chill. Thank God, you know. It's not an open-air basement, but it's fucking cold down here, and I can only find one glove. So maybe I'll just switch it back and forth, or maybe I'll do the thing where, like, maybe I can, like, they're too small. I can't wear them both on the same, on the hands at the same time. I tried. It didn't work. It's cold. It's cold up here in the Midwest. How is it everywhere else? Is it cold everywhere else? If it's not, fuck you. I wish it wasn't cold. All right. So, Royal Rumble was Sunday. Was on the post show for that. Talked about it. Also talked about it a little bit more on Monday. But Edge won that. The Royal Rumble match. good for him. I mean, apparently he was angling for it himself, which is, like, less good for him. Like, I mean, I'm willing to let that whole deal play out. It did not seem as though they were positioned to give the rub to any new young superstars the way that they were and did with Bianca Belair on the women's side. So the only other person I would have gone with is Daniel Bryan, but, and he probably would have been my choice just for the fact he's never won it. It would feel like a make good for those times where, like, they intentionally pissed us off by having him not win it. And then we could have done a really amazing match. Daniel Bryan, in his, as he said, the last WrestleMania that he'll ever do as a full-time performer, up against Roman Reigns, the ultimate underdog versus the big dog, at the height of his powers. Daniel Bryan, never giving up. Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania one last time, trying to become WWE champion one last time. And then Roman, as he always does, cheats to win. Well, I can't think of any other way of like cementing Roman's legacy as maybe one of the greatest one-year runs as a heel ever. Like, I don't think you ever turn this guy babyface again. I'm sorry. Like, this is too good. But that would have been my choice. It's still, depending on how they do this, it still might be like a hindsight is 2020 deal with that. But they appear to be doing something else with Daniel Bryan, and I am intrigued enough with what they're doing with him to not think, you know. We don't know if it's a waste yet, because Daniel Bryan is also, like, doing stuff creatively on the creative team, and he seems to be handpicking the people he's working with right now, and I trust him implicitly. So we'll see where that goes. Anyway, Edge wins Royal Rumble. So he went to Raw. He did, had a little thing, talked to Drew. Drew's got his hands full with Sheamus. Went to NXT. I appreciated that he gave a reason for why he went. You know, like when I was rehabbing and trying to get back to become a wrestler again, I watched NXT and said, this is it, man. This is what I want to do. This made me love wrestling again, watching NXT, which is why he showed up there and why he's considering coming for the NXT title, because he's never had the NXT title, is what he said. And so, okay, fine. He's never going to choose the NXT title to go after. But I appreciated that they were like, you know, who knows? You never know. Is it WWE? You never know. The only thing you know is you never know. So everyone says, the old reports are, old Meltz says, we're going to definitely get Edge versus Roman at Mania. So this will be it, right? This will be the time. We are definitely going to get the match announced tonight, last night. Definitely going to happen. 100%. No chance that it's not going to happen. It didn't happen. But, you know, it was... So Roman comes out, and he does his thing, you know. Goddamn, what a tragedy that was. One of the best last man standing matches I've ever seen, with spots like you would not believe. So fucking crazy. And the one thing that fucked it up was they couldn't figure out to use gimmicked handcuffs for the final spot. Because Roman can't win a match without going for a low blow, which sucks. I don't think they should be doing this. I think he should be winning matches. I think he should be winning matches. I mean, as clean as a heel can win them, but not going for low blows and shit all the time. Anyway, goes for a low blow, and Kevin has to sell the low blow for like 7 fucking minutes while we wait for Paul Heyman and his stubby little fingers to figure out how to unlock the handcuffs. And that ruined all the momentum, and it really fucking sucked to almost ruin the entire match. The ending was just shit. Because when he finally gets out of the cuffs, he just saunters over into a guillotine on Kevin Owens, and that's it. And that's not how that should have done. That's not how it should have ended. It was bad. It was a bad ending. But one thing I don't appreciate is Roman Reigns coming out. I know he's like fucking narcissistic and delusional, but I don't like being lied to, even by the heels. I kicked Kevin Owens' ass. He had no shot, and that's why I kicked his ass, and he's gone. You're never going to see him again. Like, you won the match versus Kevin Owens, like you did, you won the match, but the non-gimmicked cuffs kind of fucked it up at the end there, and he had you. Like, you could not stand while you were cuffed to the bottom of that metal structure. The ref got to 9.5, and then you threw the ref forehead first into some metal stuff. Otherwise, you would have lost. Like, telling us that you kicked Kevin Owens' ass and now he's going to be gone forever. It's just, it's bullshit. I don't like that. Like, After you, here's the thing you could have done. I mean, this would have made you super vicious. He's lying there, passed out, because you put him out in the guillotine chokehold, and he's lying there, disabled, and you're so pissed that he almost beat you that even after you win with the last man standing thing, you beat his unconscious body with a chair for like a minute and a half. Then you could say, I kicked his ass and he's never coming back again. But just putting him out, out with a guillotine and that's it. That's not enough. Anyway, he starts talking about Edge. Edge won the Royal Rumble. I don't understand, Edge. He says, why did you even bother going to Raw or NXT? You know I'm the top guy. You know that if you want to be in the main event of WrestleMania, you got to come see me. So why'd you even waste your time? Why are you wasting my time? I know you're here. Come out and challenge me to the match at WrestleMania. And you know what? Jey Uso is back. He was gone for a few weeks. Now he's back. Good. You know, he's declared for the Royal Rumble a few weeks ago and then wasn't in the Rumble. And it's fair to surmise some certain things. Contact tracing, perhaps. Inconclusive test of somebody he was in close contact with. You know, the whole Kevin Durant thing. But Paul Heyman's also out there. And he's like, hey, Paul, bring out Edge. And Edge, he's like, somebody walks up to Paul and's like, no, he's not here yet. And Paul has to tell Roman he's not here yet. Why aren't you here? Why are you playing games with me? You must think I'm a fool. Why would you think I'm a fool? You think I'm a fool. You think my family's a fool, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, I don't understand. Why is this man playing games with me? And then, what a wonderful moment. He just goes from, why is this man playing games with me? To, why would you play games with me? And as those of you who were listening on headphones, I'm sure did, Paul Heyman jumped, startled, flinched, as though he was in an abusive relationship with Roman Reigns, which he kind of is. You are going to give me your answer by the end of the night. Tonight, you will challenge me to this match, basically. Oh, this was a very effective segment. I did appreciate it, certainly. I'm really love everything that Roman is doing. It's a crazy, he's got a fuck, I mean, like, this is the thing, like, how could we have known? I've mentioned it before, you can go and find this stuff on YouTube. He was doing when he was Leaki in FCW, because he never actually spent any time in NXT. Neither he nor Ambrose, I believe. They were in FCW, and then NXT started up as kind of like part of that. And Seth Rollins was like the babyface champ of NXT. And then there were these two other guys in FCW, and they all got called up together as the Shield. But one of the things he was doing in FCW was he called himself the Thoroughbred, and he would wear a suit, and he'd just give promos like this. He'd always ask Byron Saxton, who was the in-ring interviewer at the time, why are you wasting my time with this, Byron? Like, why is that a question you would ask me? You know I'm not going to answer it, so what's the next question? It was just really, really, it was the early genesis of what this has become. So they fucking knew that this was a thing they could do with this guy. Like, I don't know, 9 years ago, and they didn't. So it's weird. He's been on another fucking level. Anyway. So, 2 weeks ago, King Corbin beat Dominic Mysterio. And then, last week, King Corbin beat Dominic Mysterio. And then, in the Royal Rumble, Dominic Mysterio eliminated Baron Corbin. Which, of course, necessitated another match in which Dominic Mysterio beat King Corbin. And next week, Dominic Mysterio will beat King Corbin. It'll be 2-2. And then, the final week, the next week, King Corbin will beat Dominic Mysterio. And then the next week, Dominic Mysterio will beat King Corbin. And then the next week, King Corbin will beat Dominic Mysterio. And let's keep doing that forever. For fucking ever. The Mania card for SmackDown looks stacked right now, guys. Like, maybe Edge versus Roman. Probably Bianca versus Sasha, which we'll talk about later. And, you know, Dominic versus King Corbin in a thrilling blow-off to their best of 27 match series. I can't tell you how little of a shit I don't give about all of this. Dominic is fine in the ring. He's not like crazy gifted. He's not like terrible. There've been some nepotism stuff in the ring where it's like, holy shit. Like that, Eric Watt. Was that his name? It's a WCW. Just the worst. But like his dad was like booking the whole thing. So he couldn't hit a drop kick. He was awful. And Dominic's not that. He's not awful, but he's still green, and he could benefit from some seasoning. Why is he not at the Performance Center? Or, you know, being... I mean, I guess because Ray's only got so much time left, and they want to do this before Ray goes away for good. But there are so many more talented guys out there, like, all around, who deserve this spot more than Dominic right now. I'm not saying Dominic won't get there eventually, and maybe even soon, like in the next 2 years or whatever, but not now. Not marquee matches on TV like 3 weeks in a row. Shit. No way. No how. No way. No. Before the match, Dominic and Ray come out, and they're crossing to go to the edge of the stage so they can pump up the crowd that's not there. And when Dominic has his back turned, Corbin attacks him. And then Corbin attacks Ray and throws him off the stage. And then they keep checking on Ray's leg for a long time. And so Dominic versus Baron Corbin is a match that occurs. And it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Who fucking cares? Who could possibly give a shit? Who could possibly give a shit about this? It's fine. There's nothing wrong with the match. Who, other than like the Dominic Mysterio family, could possibly give a shit? I guess that's not fair. I suppose King Corbin has some family. You know who he doesn't have? Bodyguards anymore. So, Steve Cutler, one of the Knights of the Lone Wolf. It'd be kind of funny if last night Wesley Blake had come out in his horrible, dorky little costume with his hoodie pulled up and, like, zipped all the way closed, like, just like this. And then he's wearing that over a blazer, a black blazer, and he's wearing blue jeans, and it's just fucking ridiculous. If Wesley Blake last night had been the lone knight of the Lone Wolf, because he's alone now, because There's no other ones because his tag team partner got cut because he got COVID, apparently. So he got COVID, and his girlfriend, Deonna Purrazzo, who was a cut during the first round of COVID-era cuts back in the spring, and all she fucking did was, like, go over to Impact and immediately become their champion and prove that she is one of the best women's wrestlers in the world today. As a lot of us knew, even when she wasn't on TV in NXT and wasn't being used properly by WWE, well, they released her. She maintained a relationship with Steve Cutler. They both tested positive in January. And he couldn't make TV. I guess there was a specific Knights of the Lone Wolf angle that couldn't wait. It had to be shot during the second week of January or whatever. And Vince was super pissed, even though he wasn't at SmackDown tapings a lot. So I don't know what the fuck's up with that. But yeah, he was at the Performance Center bumping for the big guy class that they're doing, because they're still doing that. Just a really good, affable guy who everybody loved and everybody thought what a great guy he was, how great he was to work with in the ring, because he was always like, it always hit his marks, always knew what to do, never screwed you up, never, like, everything. Everybody who worked with him thought he was great. Out of the fucking blue. A shock. Now, when the news dropped, I assumed he asked for his release, because why wouldn't you? Like, through no fault of his own, he gets kicked off of TV after he got brought up and was immediately put into a feud with the New Day. Like, that's a huge rub, because you figure they're probably going to win, you know, the beginning of that feud, maybe. I mean, maybe not. I mean, Sanity, remember them? They got brought up and were immediately feuding with the New Day, but that went nowhere. So you never know. But Vince being Vince, I think, you know, the thinly veiled right-wing biker oath keepers type shit that the Forgotten Sons were probably wouldn't write up old Vince's alley. So I mean, it probably would have been something. Anyway, old Jackson Ryker decided to, you know, publicly endorse a fascist. So, you know, and also like me, why are these black people complaining? They've had it good for too long, says Jackson Ryker. So yeah, it made him a kind of a pariah in the locker room, but there wasn't really a reason to, like, just fire that guy. Just release that guy. If you can release somebody for getting COVID, you can release them, that a different person, for being a horrible fucking asshole and a bigot. You know, since, you know, they're not really employees, so they're kind of entirely at will contracts. You can fire anybody for anything. I mean, if you can fire somebody for getting COVID. It's weird they didn't fire Drew McIntyre, though. That's weird, right? Because he had COVID around the same time. That's kind of odd, right? That they fired one guy for having COVID and missing TV, but Drew McIntyre got COVID. I mean, he missed TV. I mean, he was did a little video stuff from his own home, but still missed TV. Pretty sure they should have fired Drew McIntyre. Anyway, he was blindsided by this. I thought he should have asked for his release, because when they finally brought him back after years and years and years, the best thing they had for them, years and years and years, months and months and months, the best thing they had for him and his tag team partner, Wesley Blake, was this horrible fucking gimmick of these guys who, I don't know what the fuck they thought they were doing when they dressed them like that. And then they didn't even get lines. They hadn't had a match yet. Like, you couldn't figure out a way to cobble together a tag match for these guys? These are former they've had tag title matches in NXT. Like, they didn't actually become NXT tag champions, but they were right there. They had multiple tag title matches in NXT. And they couldn't get a fucking tag match since they came back as the Knights of the Lone Wolf. I assumed he asked for his release and was granted it. I was out here hoping, like, hey, I hope Wesley Blake asks for his release next, and then they can have identical, the same length long, 90-day compete clauses, and when they both get done with them on the same day, they can show up in Impact or AEW or wherever the fuck they want, and hey, another fun tag team to watch, because those guys could work. No, apparently just blindsided him with a fucking firing him because he got COVID, which is despicable, like beyond despicable. It's one of those things, like, it's so cartoonishly evil. It's just like, you can't even really be mad about it. It's like impressive. Like, that's one of the most evil things I've ever heard. Like, that's just astonishing more than like angering. A lot of other things you do is angering, like, you know, putting a horrible fucking racist on right after your Black History Month segment. So they gave Corbin his own little security squad. Then they released one guy from it. The other guy, who knows what the hell's happening with Wesley Blake? Maybe he'll stick around long enough, and he and Buddy Murphy can reteam as Blake and Murphy again. But the thing about it is, now Buddy Murphy is a legendary worker. And Wesley Blake is a fantastic all-around hand in the ring. Just really, really great. He just does everything very, very well. If nothing spectacular, he does everything very, very well. So, yeah, could you re-put together Blake and Murphy and give them a run at the tag titles on SmackDown? Hell yes, you could. Hell yes, you could. They're not going to do that, though. So Mysterio comes down in the middle of this match and gets involved because, of course, he does. He snakes under the ring while Baron Corbin is out of the ring, and he grabs a hold of Baron Corbin's ankle from under the ring, blatantly cheating, which allows Dominic to hit a 619 to like the back of Corbin's head as he's standing there trying to get back in the ring. And then he hits a big frog splash on him for the 1-2-3. So do you know what's going to help the kid get over as a babyface in today's WWE? How about his old man cheats so he can win? Like, is that not, like, one of the most nepotistic things you've ever heard? Like, he can't win unless his daddy, future Hall of Famer Rey Mysterio, cheats on his behalf. Like, the only fucking reason you're even here, kid, is because your daddy is Rey Mysterio. That just pisses off a lot of people right there. But then you can't win a match against Baron Corbin unless your daddy directly cheats on your behalf. Like, how fucked up is that? That they want us to root for this kid. They want us to root for Dominic when that's how he wins matches. Jesus, I was wrong. SmackDown's in a terrible place. I mean, they're not. There's other things that are better than that. This is the first part of the night. Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro. Another Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro match. It's a shorter match than you would expect. Cesaro wins clean by submission. Like, there's a a crazy fucking backbreaker. Like it's like the old torture rack, you know, that he's doing to Daniel Bryan, and then he like gorilla presses him up over his head and down into a backbreaker. Like it's one of the most fucking disgusting looking backbreakers I've ever seen. Then immediately into the big swing, then immediately into the sharpshooter, and Bryan taps out. You know how Daniel Bryan was changed by the Fiend. Everyone who wrestles the Fiend is changed. The Fiend changes you. Well, in Daniel Bryan's case, it like you know, it made him shave his head. But you know, everybody else feels like you know they go nuts because they wrestled the Fiend, or Alexa Bliss's case like came within a few feet of the Fiend. Daniel Bryan's version of that is like he turns heels babyface via the power of his respectful wrestling. Like if may the best man win was a superpower, that's the mutant ability that Daniel Bryan has. Because he did that with Shinsuke Nakamura, who came out of that thing with Bryan. With a handshake. We're like, oh, that's interesting. And now he's full on babyface. Like he's cutting his own promos on social media where he talks about how he wants to be, he lost the Royal Rumble, but that's okay. By the way, how about that, everybody who thought Shinsuke Nakamura was going to win Royal Rumble? Yeah. It turns out that anyway, he says, I want to be the first ever Japanese WWE champion. And that's all well and good. But it is kind of funny that they're actually having him say that now, because I feel like a few years ago he wouldn't be allowed to say that because they would still be operating under the charade that the first ever Japanese WWE champion was Yokozuna. But now that like they had the documentary where they were like, ah, just kidding, he was Polynesian, like he was basically Samoan, and you know, we lied and said he was Japanese. We also kind of we told him to eat a lot so he'd look more like a sumo wrestler. It turns out that's what killed him. Kind of, you know, he wasn't in great health. We forced a man to eat himself to death. Let's do a documentary about him. Anyway, that Shinsuke Nakamura gauntlet spot that he had was apparently supposed to originally go to Cesaro, but then he wouldn't sign his contract, so they gave it to Nakamura instead, and then Cesaro signed his contract anyway. Like, Cesaro, you shouldn't have signed your contract. Nobody should sign a contract with this company. This company is awful. They're horrible people in charge of it, and you shouldn't work for them if you have a choice. And you do have a choice. Cesaro is just letting his contract lapse, and then the next day showing up in AEW, which by that point would probably be AEW / NJPW / Impact / whoever else they want to work with. Can you imagine like old Tony C going on a worldwide wrestling tour where he just gets to wrestle everybody he wants to and just fucking kick the shit out of people and get the shit kicked out of him and just turn in fantastic fucking wrestling matches all over the goddamn globe? Because I can imagine it, and I'd like to see it. But not anymore. Not now. So they dangled this... Hey, we got this awesome gauntlet spot for you in this match. And then he says... he hasn't signed his contract yet, so they're like, no, we'll just give it to your tag partner. And then what do they do with that? Is the answer nothing? Did they do nothing with it? Yes, that's true. Oh, I think he's definitely going to get, Shinsuke Nakamura is definitely going to get a championship match at Elimination Chamber or Fastlane. Like, I guess, like, maybe, but they certainly don't seem to be willing to give up this Kevin Owens thing anytime soon. But the big deal is, with this Cesaro match versus Bryan, is afterwards... Oh, yes, Cesaro gets cut up in the back of his head. I'm not really sure how. But Bryan is down in the corner, and Cesaro walks over and fist bumps him. And Cesaro is a babyface now? Like, it worked on Shinsuke, now it's Cesaro, and Shinsuke is watching this match from backstage. Like, whatever they're doing with Bryan and Shin and Cesaro is really intriguing to me, only because Daniel Bryan's involved, and I trust him to make the right decisions. Bianca Belair won the Women's Royal Rumble. It's the right choice. She's great, and they get no pass for not using her for 7 months after they called her up at Mania last year. They did fucking nothing with her, except she got to beat up Zelina Vega a couple of times because Zelina Vega poisoned her husband. Not Zelina's husband, but Bianca's husband. So anyway, they interview Bianca backstage. It's incredibly wholesome content. It is, you might say, the wholesome-est content. EST. Kayla asks her if she's gonna challenge Sasha, Asuka, who knows? They never even bring up Io. It's kind of funny where, like, Bianca's like, I ain't going back to NXT. They did not let me hold the title once when I was down there. She's not gonna wait around for too long, she says. Ruby Riott versus Bayley is a thing. They're giving Bayley something to do. I hope he doesn't bury Ruby Riott too bad. Like, Bayley should keep winning. She's a very viable, very valuable part of the women's division, wherever she's at. And Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan are primed for big things, and I don't want that to be squashed by the other thing. Like, keeping Bayley strong is important. Building Ruby and Liv is important, both things. This feud seems to cancel one of those out, and that's not good. Billie Kay is on commentary, and that's always good. She's great. I want her on commentary permanently. I also want her to be the assistant to Sonya Deville as general manager of SmackDown. Permanently. I want in a 2-hour episode of SmackDown, at least 25 minutes of screen time should have Billie Kay as part of it. That's how great she is. Ruby Riott like hits her finisher, the Riott kick, on Bayley very early in the match, and Bayley kicks out of it. So did they have another finisher planned to give to Ruby Riott? And the Riott kick is now a transitional move? Bayley takes control early, keeps it for most of it. Riott looks in trouble, so Billy runs up and almost gets into the ring, but Liv pulls her down. And then, actually, Ruby uses the distraction to try and roll up Bayley, but Bayley gets out of the roll up, and then Riott goes for another Riott kick, but Bayley counters that into her headlock driver, the Rose Plant, I believe they call it. Was that the Adam Rose's finisher? I think it was, wasn't it? That's why they call it that. Adam Rose, wow. Anyway, remember that guy? After Bailey wins, she starts walking up the ramp, but Billy runs after her, offering her a resume, and the camera cuts away, and I'm like, no, cameraman, what are you doing? I need to see this entire exchange. Bailey, being narcissistic enough to like hire Billy Kay, who is gullible enough, like Billy Kay could be like Bailey's personal assistant or whatever, I think could be really fun. As I said, more Billy Kay, always more Billy Kay. Bianca comes out. She's gonna just do a nonstop press. Her phone's been blowing up, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I should bring up, should I challenge Asuka? Should I challenge my girl, Sasha Banks? Not sure. Reginald comes out by himself. He wants to offer some advice. He says that everybody knows you can beat Asuka, but you can't beat Carmella. Sorry, you can't beat Sasha because Carmella couldn't beat Sasha, and you couldn't even beat Carmella. And then Carmella comes out like behind Reginald. It's a weird, like, they seem to have Reginald like going into business for himself, which is interesting. I think maybe this is the kind of thing they do when Vince takes a shining to somebody who's not a main player in the angle, but like a secondary player. This seems to be like, this Reginald guy, he's hilarious. Look at the way he flips and stuff. It's good shit, pal. So they have him come out and cut a promo by himself to see if he can sink or swim. And then he directly like steps in front of Carmella later in the segment to talk to Belair himself, and Carmella's like, what are you doing? Which, again, is a way of like, let's see if he can, people like him more than like Carmella. Maybe we get him out of there. I don't know. I'm not sure. But Sasha comes out. She says, I'm not going to look in my rear view and talk to Carmella anymore. That's all in the past. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm going to give you your props, Bianca. You're great. You seen how you did it to Roma matches. You, this is great. She praises her and praises her, but you know, you're not the best. You're the strongest, maybe the fastest. We are the best. I'm the best. If you're going to pick me to face at WrestleMania, go ahead. That'd be fun. But you don't have to, because I got the title, and I know that's what you want. So Reginald, this one, Reginald steps up like, you got lucky on Sunday when you win the Rumble, blah, blah, blah. Belair drops the mic and just whips Reginald with the hair. It's the hair whip thing is back. Carmella looks on like, oh my God, what's, and Banks laughs. So it looks like we're probably going to do Bianca versus Sasha, because we haven't seen Bianca on Raw at all, and they could have definitely done that on Monday, but they didn't. So, yeah, I also feel like there's ways of allowing Sasha to start out subtly heel and then build her more heelish tendencies back up as the boss character for this feud with Bianca, who they're really pushing as like this super baby face type to definitely root for Bianca type of thing. And I think that's super rootable. Like if you watch the Chronicle, if you see how she interacts with her parents or whatever, she is super rootable. And if she's as herself, she's great. The whole thing, she makes her own gear and all that stuff. It's big. It's really big. But I think Sasha has a really good opportunity. It's like you didn't even win the title in NXT. I'm the greatest women's NXT champion of all time. She would say that. She would feel that way herself. And then also, I need to actually know what this is. It's actually a crazy disparity. But it's, yeah. So, okay, there's that. And so, Sasha Banks is younger, than, Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair is 31 and Sasha Banks is 29. So Sasha Banks to say, I'm the NXT. It was NXT champion. It feels like forever ago. I'm also a 5-time NA, Raw and SmackDown champ. I think 5-time now. And I'm still 2 years younger than you. I don't know what I'm going to be by the time I'm your age. Kind of a thing. You're like, to like say, like, if you're going to be the best in the, EST or whatever, get on that. Cause I'm already there and there's something there to be done. But I think that this is definitely the feud I want. I don't Bianca versus Asuka. This doesn't hold any allure for me right now. They've never really interacted ever. This would be a really cool thing. I think Bianca versus Sasha could be so, so good. So that's what I'm hoping for. Kayla interviews Sami Zayn. Whatever. Paul Heyman talks to says to Roman that Edge is finally here. Rude and Ziggler have matching jackets. Zig and Rudler. They also have new music that is not Dolph's and not Rude's. So as the tag champs, they have their own gear, like matching jackets, and matching gear too. Like Ziggler's got the tights and Rude's got the trunks. They're definitely matching, and they got their own music now. So like they're a fucking tag team to stay. And they actually, in the matching gear, walking down, one guy is this total douche with his long hair, and the other guy, with the beard, and he's definitely got some old man strength to him. They're a very good looking tag team. It works. The act works. I don't fucking care about them. And like, if there were 4 or 5 other tag teams on SmackDown, I would probably say that Ziggler and Rude would be my 4th or 5th favorite tag team on SmackDown. But there aren't 4 or 5 other tag teams on SmackDown unless they get Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura back together again as baby faces. That's one. Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins as Street Profits are another one, but they're not allowed to have a rematch right now. And I guess, although they've never had a match as a tag team, Dominic and Rey Mysterio are one, maybe. If Jimmy Uso ever comes back from injury, I would assume Jimmy and Jay would be a tag team. That's good. I guess that is 4, kind of, if Ray and Dominic are together. And then there's Chad Gable and Otis, who have had like one match as a tag team. But they lost to Shinsuke and Cesaro fucking months ago. So they get a non-title match versus Rude and Ziggler, and Michael Cole has the nerve, the unmitigated gall, the temerity, the audacity to say, this is a non-title match, but you got to think, if Otis and Chad Gable can secure the victory, well, that would put them in a big spot to maybe have a title match later. Like, that's the only reason they do this shit. And of course, Not that I'm saying that these two guys who've had one tag match together and lost it deserve to have a title match, because they don't. But why isn't this a title match? Because you had Roode and Ziggler win pseudo-clean. So if they're going to win the match anyway, why isn't it for the title? You know, like, it's just a weird thing that they do with this thing, and I hate it. I appreciated the way that it ended. This match, though, doesn't change anything. Like, the fact that Ziggler and Roode beat Otis and Gable clean doesn't mean Otis and Gable don't get another shot. They'll probably have another shot next week. And if they win that match, then we'll forget all about the match they lost, because the match next week will actually be the big thing that will determine if they have a title shot. And maybe so at Elimination Chamber, you're probably going to get Otis and Gable versus Roode and Ziggler for the titles, because they don't have any other fucking tag teams. Like, I don't know. The end of the match was kind of fancy. Not fancy, but like, I appreciated the way it was put together. They had Ziggler on the outside, like running Otis into the ring post on the apron, and then getting into the ring and Gable doing his chaos theory, rolling German suplex to Ziggler, and he stood up directly into the glorious DDT, which, you know, 1, 2, 3. So, I mean, Roode and Ziggler work really well together as a tag team. I just don't fucking care about either one of them. So when you put them together, I don't care about them as a duo. But I don't know how you could care about them. Like, I just don't. So, they do. Oh, the Street Profits are on commentary for the match, but not at ringside. They're sitting together in a picture-in-picture, like screaming. Like, just, I don't know what they're saying. It's impossible to focus on the match at some points because they're just so obnoxious. It's like somebody said, here, guys, here's some microphones. Be as obnoxious as you possibly can. Like, really, really great on people's nerves. I don't think that really is going to help the Street Profits with their whole deal. It's not working for me. This is where they go to a Black History Month video with Big E and Titus O'Neil and Montez Ford talking about Harriet Tubman and, you know, WWE honors Black History Month. Coming up next, a virulent racist will spew bullshit about a match he lost 33 years ago. You chose to put those two things back to back. You did. It was 33 years ago. On Main Event, WWE Main Event, with 33 million people tuned in to watch. That was where, you know, Ted DiBiase bought the title. Like, he basically, like, said, I'm going to buy it from you, Andre, after you beat Hogan for it. And then that was the match with the two Hebners, where, like, one Hebner counted the thing, the pin, even though Hogan's shoulder was up,
And then another Hebner ran in and said, "Hey, who are you?" And that was when Hogan, because he's a babyface, threw the referee 14 feet out of the ring. And that's it. And it's Hogan and Jimmy Hart backstage. This is obviously recorded at the same during Legends Night on January 4th or whenever the fuck that was. Which means like 33 years ago, like this week in WWE history is what they called this segment, which means they could do these forever. If like just Hulk Hogan talking about some bullshit he did a long time ago. That's the name of this segment. And when they actually get him to talk about it, he was like, I had to fight a big, stinky, wart-infested giant. That's what he says about Andre. He's big and stinky, and he's infested with warts. So what a man said on television, a grown-ass man. Talked about a giant who was big and stinky and was infested with warts. You know, and it was a match he fucking lost. So it's just so weird that they had him do, but they're probably going to have him do this a lot. About like, oh, and 28 years ago, this fucking thing happened. And and 31 years ago, this thing happened. And it'll never be on an actual really date. It'll never be on 25 years or 30 years or whatever. It'll all be just random thing. 33 years and 4 days ago, this thing happened. And the whole promo was that he cut after the thing was he was like, "Well, I like Edge. He's my old tag team partner," he said. And I guess I blocked that out of my memory. But he said, "Well, you're going to choose Drew McIntyre or Roman Reigns for WrestleMania 37. Well, what you going to do, Drew? What you going to do, Roman, when Hulkamania and Edge run wild on you?" Wouldn't you just like just change it to Edge-a-mania? You could change it to Edge-a-mania. Like, what the fuck do you have to do with any of this? Hogan, what do you have to do? Like, run Hulkamania! Also, Edge is there, too. Run wild on you! Like, just get off my fucking TV screen, you piece of shit racist. Get fucked! Get fucked, racist! The fuck off my goddamn TV screen, especially during fucking Black History Month. Fuck you! It's, if you don't know what Hogan said, it's very easily Googleable. Fuck Hulk Hogan. Fuck him forever in hell with a spiked dildo. Triple threat in Intercontinental Championship match that we knew was coming, but was a good match. Big E wins. Sami Zayn gets to be, you know, super chicken shitty. And Apollo Crews looks good in defeat. The big thing is when Sammy's able to get a haluva kick on Big E, and then he gets in Cruz's face, and Apollo Crews has none of it. Oh, he gets a haluva kick on Big E, and Crews pulls Sami Zayn out of the ring. And Sami Zayn is all up in Cruz's face, and Apollo Crews is like, "No, we're not going to have that." So it was fun to see Sami Zayn like literally beg off during a match. Like, "No, please don't hit me." Like, it was like, and like just Apollo Crews yeets him into the scorer's table. Jesus Christ, he threw him a long way. And then he gets into the ring and walks like right into a big ending from Big E. And then he is not happy. I really enjoyed seeing him a few weeks ago in Roman Reigns' inner sanctum. Can we get that, please? Can we get Apollo Crews joining the Heyman family? I think that'd be great. I think it's obviously they're doing something else, but I feel like you could hold off on this. I mean, everything takes forever in WWE anyway. Everything lasts forever. I feel like
You could have Cruz take the title off of Big E in the early summer, the Intercontinental title, which would, because Cruz is part of Roman Reigns' entourage, Big E could like move up and start to challenge Roman. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Big E versus Roman at SummerSlam for the Universal title. That's something you could do. You could easily do that. And a lot of that, I think a way to get into that program is through a Apollo Crews shaped viaduct. Yeah, Cruz is very pissed when he watches Big E celebrate. So, Ed's walking around backstage, gives a fist bump to Sonya Deville. There's like a list of people that that Edge has personally said, "Hey, could you film me backstage near this person? I want to give them a rub." So that's good. Seth Rollins is coming back next week on SmackDown. They did one of these before when he's supposed to come back on like New Year's Day, and they didn't do that either. So, I still have no idea what you do with Seth Rollins as the Messiah character on a show where his old buddy Roman Reigns is the biggest, baddest heel we've seen in years. I don't know how those two guys coexist. One guy who thinks he's the literal Messiah on the same show as a guy he used to run with who was a mob boss. Like, I don't know how that works. You think they're going to have to butt heads. They can't work together, not when both of them are horrible fucking narcissists. So here's the end of SmackDown. Edge comes out and he says, he dreamed of coming here to SmackDown, coming back home because, you know, SmackDown was part of SmackDown 6 and all that kind of stuff. He talks about, you know, how he's, who do I choose? Blah, 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 blah. It's a long, he does it really well. He's very good at promos. It's a lot of nothing. It's not an important promo. It's like, hey, if you just tuned in right now and missed literally everything for the past 2 weeks, here's a summary. So this portion of it, before the actual swerve in quotation marks ending, everything from when Roman came out till the surprise ending is some of the best tension building shit I've seen to make me want to watch a match between two guys that I've ever seen. This was stellar. Roman comes out with Jey Uso and Paul Heyman. And Edge is just standing there. He moves aside to let everybody get in. And so Edge is on one side of the ring, and there's Roman. Behind him is Paul Heyman, kind of just standing there all smug. And then Jey Uso, pacing like a panther. And Edge is like, you had to bring backup? I mean, I'm just happy about myself. And I love that Reigns says, I give you my word that without my blessing, without my express consent, Paul will not attack you. Which is great. and Roman was so happy at his joke, and so was Paul, that I thought it was so, so fun. And the best part, Uso's not laughing. He's just pacing right back and forth. He's a caged fucking panther. It's so good. And he says, no. I'm in your head already. That's why he's out here. Because you don't want to face me by yourself. And Reigns says, Oos, go wait for me in the bus. I'll see you after. And Jay isn't happy about it, but he does what he's told, and he leaves. And Roman is not happy about being called out about that. But I thought it was so well done. Especially, Uso was just, he wanted so badly to kick the shit out of Edge. And it was just so cool on Edge's part. Like, what the hell is this guy for? And Reigns realizing that it does make him look weak to have Jey Uso out here. So I'm going to ask him to leave. And Uso doing it, but not being happy about it. All of it was all perfectly put together. I'm going to give you that one. That one time disrespecting me. Says Ainge. And you disrespect me, my family. We're not going to do this again. So I'm only going to say this one time. Acknowledge me. And I was like, don't make the guy call you his tribal chief. Edge isn't in a tribe. Like, it's not, you're not his tribal chief. It always felt so weird when he would ask Kevin Owens to acknowledge me as your tribal chief. Like, nah, that's fucking stupid. But he didn't. He said, acknowledge me as the main event of WrestleMania. Because in Roman's mind, and he's not wrong, the guy who wins the Royal Rumble chooses the main event guy to go up against because that's the main event and that's the best payday. So when Edge chooses me, it confirms that I am the main attraction in WWE. If he were to choose Drew, what a horrible disrespect that would be. Because he would think that Drew is bigger than me. No, we're not going to do that. Acknowledge me as the main event of WrestleMania. Acknowledge me as the champion of choice. Do it now. That's your cue. Go. And the whole thing, Edge is just standing there, bemused. Like, man, what is up with this guy? I think that's all fucking great. God, it was so good. Like, it was so fucking good. And Kevin Owens comes in and stunners Roman Reigns. And Edge, without a word, just leaves. Now, two things. They're drawing this out, and I can respect that. Drawing it out by having another fucking Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns match? Like, that's not their program for Elimination Chamber, surely. Surely it is not. No. Can't be. But next week, I have a feeling on SmackDown we're going to get Edge and KO versus Roman and Jey Uso, which I would not be opposed to at all. But all that moment, though, that moment when Reigns steps to Edge and says, you will challenge me to a match at WrestleMania because that proves that I am what I think I am in my head. Like, the psychosis of that is so great. And Edge's response to being talked to in that way, to just stand there and smirk, like, hose me down, folks. Like, that's as I was like, I really actually think there's a great story to be told there if Edge challenges Drew, because, you know, he wants the original WWE title, doesn't really want the WWE Universal title. It's not really as prestigious as the other title. And but I actually think that if Edge and Drew had a match at WrestleMania, perhaps the crowd might turn on Drew and cheer Edge until Edge, of course, being the ultimate opportunist as he is, of course, Edge would cheat to beat Drew, and then Edge would have his title back, which would be, I think, very good. And
I was wrong. I still think that would be a great program, but if the program exists where you get Roman Reigns this fucking angry all the time, God, that's some good shit. It's very, very good. The only thing about this is there's no way you can have Edge beat Roman Reigns. You can't. It's not possible. Never going to happen. So, Edge doesn't get his title back? Like, I thought that was the whole point of this. Edge versus Drew, you can easily find a way to get Edge to beat Drew at Mania. Edge is not beating Roman Reigns at Mania. That's just not a thing that you can do. You are not allowed to do that. That is not, you are not allowed to do that. So that sucks, because I do think Edge deserves that run with a title that he never lost. I do. And I think that would be a really cool thing of, like, Edge could beat Drew. I mean, he hasn't picked Roman yet. He's going to pick Roman. He hasn't picked Roman yet, so there's still a possibility he could come on Raw on Monday and say, I choose Drew. And if he beats Drew, I think it'd be kind of a cool thing of, like, I had to retire because I was injured, and I had to give up this championship. Now I've got it back. And here's the deal. The day that I lose this championship, I will retire for real. And then have Edge defend that title as often as possible to whoever shows up on Raw. Build little mini feuds for he can do stuff at the pay-per-views or whatever. And the guy who finally beats Edge, to retire him for good, what a fucking rub that'll be for that guy. And it should be a newer talent, somebody you might not think would do it. But they're not going to do that, though. They're not. They're going to definitely do Edge versus Roman. And I think it could be really great. But too bad for those people who wanted to see Edge get a title run again, because that ain't happening. Everybody, that was SmackDown. And this has been Sour Grabs. I've been Alex Bielowski. I want to believe they're not going to fuck this up. I want to believe that they're not going to screw everything up. If we get a great program, Edge versus Roman, if we get a great program and an amazing match, Bianca versus Sasha, and Bianca wins because you need to make new stars, allowing her to beat Sasha Banks would be a big, big thing for Bianca if they do that. If they do something really, really interesting with this Daniel Bryan and Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro deal, like, really interesting and worthwhile and a cool story worth telling, maybe Daniel Bryan not getting his shot at the title at Mania, maybe it doesn't matter. If they do something really great with Big E and Apollo and allow Apollo to kind of be welcomed into Roman Reigns' whole deal. If they figure out what the fuck they're doing with the tag team division, I'm just kidding, they're never going to figure out what the fuck they're doing with the tag team division on SmackDown. No, they're never going to figure out what the fuck they're doing with the tag team division on SmackDown. But if they do all those other things, there's reason to think that it might be good going forward. But there's no way they do all those things, right?
I mean, they won't even do most of those things right. We'll be lucky if they do one of those things right. Unfortunately. Those of you out there in America, living in states that are actively trying to kill the people living in them by repealing social distancing orders and mask mandates, please stay safe. I'm speaking of the state I live in right now, Wisconsin, as well as others. For those of you who are thinking about going to a party to watch the big game, please don't. Just be smart, stay at home, and make yourself a plate of nachos. Put some Hot Pockets and pizza rolls in the oven. It's not gonna be worth it, I promise you. Be safe out there, everybody. I love you all, and I don't want to see any of you get sick or horribly ill. That's a thing that out there, because you know there's that and everything else. I mean, if you got sick, maybe your employer or person you work for as an independent contractor, if you got sick, they might fire you. Out of the blue, with no warning. Because, especially when you work for Vince McMahon, everything sucks.